Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 298 with Brian Rutherford.
Who called us up and said, is your general manager at a high-end winery, said, hey, I've got three barrels of really good cab that we're not going to barrel. If I got you a sample, would you maybe be interested in buying it? And so we tasted the sample. It was amazing. We talked prices, figured out we're going to have less money into that than the wine we made ourselves. And so we bought it. We bought three barrels, turned out to be 75 cases of wine. We pre-sold it to just our close family and friends. And then turned out that that wine at that winery got 99 points from Robert Parker, one of the big wine advocates, or one of the scorers, right?
Brian co-founded a wine business while on active duty, which is one of several side hustles in his life. Regardless of your interest in wine, entrepreneurship, or side hustle, this is a fantastic interview. We talk about how you can use an existing product while bringing marketing and branding to the table to make it a business. In Brian's case, he is redistributing wines from incredible vineyards under his own label, which means he doesn't have to worry about creating and maintaining a unique product. We talk about how preparation happens well before the opportunity arises, about giving back, about using volunteering opportunities, about cultivating side pursuits while in the military, and more. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with text transcript of this episode, as well as links to everything we discuss, and nearly 299 other episodes just like this one. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Brian. Joining me today, normally in Ashburn, Virginia, but today on vacation in Destin, Florida, my guest is Brian Rutherford. Brian, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks. I really, am excited to be able to share our story and chat a little bit about growing a business.
Awesome. Well, for listeners, Brian, I had written in my notes, Brian is currently serving in the U.S. Army, where he's a team leader for a multifunction cyberspace operations team, and he served for 15 years. But I'm going to amend that because I just learned he is just starting on terminal leave. So that's a big transition going on that is very recent. He's also, more importantly for this conversation, the founder of Claudine Wines. Am I saying that right, Claudine? Okay.
Claudine Wines, yep.
Claudine Wines, which is what we're going to spend most of our time talking about today. He started out at West Point. He's served in the Army since graduating in 2004. He has an MBA from the MIT Sloan School of Management. And so let's actually, since you're in it, man, let's talk about the transition. How did that come about, especially given that it's at that awkward 15-year point, and how is it going so far?
Yeah, hey, it's a question I get most often. Why would you leave at 15 years? Well, first of all, I'm staying in the reserves, and I'm looking forward to that chapter. But I think we all leave at some point, and I leave having done everything I've ever wanted to do and more in the Army. So whether it started out in the infantry, then got to teach at West Point for a couple of years, and then switch over to cyber and lead a cyber team. It really is, it's not about, hey, the Army's not doing something for me or whatnot. It really is about just solving different problems and looking for that next challenge. And, you know, if it's all about the money and the retirement, well, you know, I think I've got a few things going to that's not going to be a huge issue. And like I said, still staying in the reserve. So far, so good. I guess we'll find out when I actually don't have my ID card anymore. So still got a couple months of terminal leave.
That's awesome. Well, let's start with, I want to zoom back. I want to go rewind to the starting of Claudine Wines, but let me just start today. If you bumped into someone randomly on the street who's serving in the military and they said, Brian, what is it that you're doing now that you're out of the Army? How would you answer that question?
Yeah, so it's all about doing multiple things, and hopefully we get to talk about that a little bit. Is, you know, I think as you think about financial freedom and really what you want to do in life from a professional standpoint, having multiple income streams is the way to go. I talk to plenty of people who do real estate on the side, or maybe they just rent out their homes that they bought along the way as they move from post and base to base. And for me, this is just this was my way of finding a little side hustle and then moving along. So the short story about what we do is we go to high-end wineries in Napa Valley, generally speaking, and buy their orphan barrels, 3 to 5 barrels at a time, that for a lot of reasons, they're not going to bottle themselves. We make a deal on the spot, and then we bottle it under our own label. And that's where, that's what we do. So in, you know, when we buy the wine, we can't say where we get it from. So we get really, really good prices. So for example, our Cabernet is, would sell for normally about $150 a bottle if it has that winery's label on it. For us, we sell it for $50 or less. And we're able to do that because we don't say where we get it from. And so, again, you're drinking really good wine for not a lot of money.
That's awesome. So there's plenty here to dig into, but let me just ask one question so I understand. I'm guessing that, you know, let's say this winery sells their wine for $100. At that price point, they have a lot more supply of grapes and wine than they can actually sell. So they're just kind of like, hey, we can't actually sell this at that price point, but we don't want to diminish our brand. We don't want to lose out on that. But if we can make, you know, $50 from you and you can sell it or whatever they end up paying, is that about right of how that relationship works?
That's exactly right. You know, we realized that a couple of years ago that there was nobody doing this in the small lots. There's plenty of big wineries that are buying a lot of bulk wine, and that's the part of the market that we're in is bulk wine. They were doing low-cost, high-volume stuff, but we said, hey, I bet there's really good wine at these high-end wineries too, and that turns out to be true. But you're right, they worry about brand image a whole lot. There are flash sale sites. We've probably all seen them. They do it in the wine business as well. They, you know, it hurts their brand when you have a full price, full paying customer, maybe somebody on your email list who buys full price one day and then 3 weeks later they see the same wine that they just paid full price for on a flash sale site for 60% off.
Oh, totally.
And then they call up the winery.
Oh yeah.
And cancel their membership.
Or I say I'm never going to buy again until I find a good deal, and then I forget to do it, and I can imagine there's a lot there. So. Take us back to the origin. Where did this come from?
Yeah. So, you know, I first visited Napa Valley in 2008. And for those of you who've been, it's like surreal, right? It's really pretty. It's Northern California. There's some very opulent buildings. The wineries are amazing. And so probably bit by the bug back then, just coming off of a deployment and getting ready for another one, said, wow, it'd be awesome to be a part of this somehow. And so fast forward a few years, my brother, and who's my business partner, lives in the San Francisco area. We kind of fell into it. We actually made wine one year. We bought grapes. We bought a half a ton of grapes. We went to a custom crush place who did the wine making for us. And then a year later, after it spent some time in the barrel, we had our first wine. And it was like not that good, right? We had basically about $25 per bottle into it, and it wasn't that great. And so we thought, oh, that was fun once. We'll never do that again. We're not really winemakers. And so we kind of put that on the shelf. The next year, we had a general manager who became a family friend. So hopefully we talk a little bit about networking, how important that is, who called us up and said, your general manager at a high-end winery said, hey, I've got 3 barrels of really good cab that we're not going to barrel. If I got you a sample, would you maybe be interested in buying it? And so, we tasted the sample. It was amazing. We talked prices, figured out we're going to have less money into that than the wine we made ourselves. And so we bought it. We bought 3 barrels, turned out to be 75 cases of wine. We pre-sold it to just our close family and friends. And then turned out that wine at that winery got 99 points from Robert Parker, one of the big wine advocates, or one of the scorers, right? Wine critics. So we found out, wow, you can actually buy really high end wine if you know the right person and they're ready to pull the trigger, I suppose, when the opportunity is there. And so a few more of our friends heard about this, said, hey, next time you do that, I'm in for a case, 3 cases, whatever. And so the following year, so this is the third year that we put Claudine on a bottle, we were offered 9 barrels, and we said we probably need to get a little bit more legitimate and build this the right way. So built the website, got the proper licensing, and then hit go. And that was 3 years ago. Sold that first bottle in September of 2016. I don't know where the time goes, but somehow we went from a very small email list, really family and close friends, and here we are with about 1,300 people on an email list, and I'm sending wine all over the country. You know, I'll tell you, the day you know and you make it is when you don't know who's buying your stuff, right? I remember seeing all the orders come in. We use Shopify as a platform, great place to get up and going. And I'd see a name come through and like, oh, I know that person. Or, you know, then at some point, like, I don't know who that is. I don't know where I'm shipping that wine. I wonder how they heard about us. And then, you know, we grew like that. So that's the, I guess maybe not so short story.
No, but, this is great. And so a couple things that come up for me, first of all, just to make sure I'm tracking right, I'm guessing that if you're kind of taking a wine, repackaging it, selling it, that's essentially saying the risk is less on you, or that your energy is less spent on product. It's much more spent around marketing, sales, distribution, maybe some like branding and stuff like that, but you're not having to spend all of your time developing a wine or like build, you know, I don't know what the right word is for it. Is that fair?
You're exactly right. We go to the very end of the process. And then I say we de-risk the whole thing, right? We go to the end. Luckily for us, there's plenty of really good wine out there. I will say this though, that we, for every 10 things we taste, we probably don't produce 9 of them. They either are not the right price or just not the right profile for us. And so we, again, think about how things have changed for us. We now get phone calls from wineries saying, hey, would you be interested in? Wow. It used to be us going to them saying, hey, do you have a few extra barrels? Because again, all that brand image stuff that we talked about is absolutely true and something they care about. But you're right, we go to the end of the process, we taste, we only buy the barrels that that meet kind of our standards. And we like literally mark a barrel in a cellar, and then have our one of our delivery partners come and pick up those barrels and take it to the bottler.
Wow, and I may have missed this, but where did your love? Because that's a deep understanding of wine, right? Like you're not are you a sommelier, or like where did this start? And like, how did you gain the confidence to say like, hey, I like this, and therefore other people will like it, versus like, I don't know. Like for me, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Exactly. That's a great question. I mean, my parents were drinking. I think they went to Napa Valley first time in the mid-90s. A friend took them there and said, hey, we got to try out this place. So they went. And so I would say as I grew up, there was kind of good wine around the house. And so of course, I didn't drink till I was 21. But if let's say that I did a little bit before, you know, I was kind of grew up on good wine. And so it's just like good coffee or good beer or anything else that is like, once you've had good quality, it's very hard to take a step backwards.
Yep.
So we grew the business because I wanted to drink good wine, but my budget couldn't afford the good wine. Right. So
that's amazing.
So here we are.
What I love in this example though, for listeners, is I often hear from veterans and non-veterans alike, I want to start a business and I don't have an idea, or I don't know what, you know, the product is. And you're exemplifying a form of entrepreneurship where you don't have to necessarily create something entirely from scratch. And I imagine there's parallels in pretty much every product where you can take some sort of more generic product and make it your own and then focus on a limited skill set. And I'm admiring that, because for you to produce and really develop that's 50 different skill sets, and you've kind of maybe narrowed it down to 20 skill sets that you need to be successful, which is certainly easier than, or more focused than, trying to do everything.
So you're exactly right. I mean, if I am anything, I am a branding and marketing person. You know, yes, we have to have good product and we need to be specific when we choose the wine that we produce. However, really, it is about the story that I tell about it. And that is what's interesting. To the right demographic, you know, if you've never spent more than $15 on a bottle of wine, when you hear that ours is $50, you're like, that's still really expensive. And I totally understand that. So we realize that when we do our, you know, marketing, we focus that on people who've already maybe spent $100. And I tell them they can get that same experience for 50% off or even more in some cases. So we've learned that over time about who's our best customer and how do we find our best customer. Because not everybody, you have to have the right product and market fit. And that's what we've learned over time, what ours is.
And I think what's powerful for listeners is whether it's sales or entrepreneurship or whatever aspect of business you go into, you're illustrating that as a company, you are not selling to everyone. You are getting smarter and smarter about the tiny subset of customers that are your customers, and that's where you go after. And I do see, you know, my own path, I've done this as a mistake, and I see a lot of people do this where you want everyone to love your product or whatever you're doing, when in truth, you really just need to find the small, relatively small subset who loves that and who sees that as like, hey, this is a great deal. It's not $100. One thing I wanted to ask about is when you started that, you said you had that first batch of, I forget, it was like, let's say 9 cases. How did you have the money to do that initial purchase? And was that a big leap of faith, or was that kind of something where it was like, I'm throwing a roulette ball and if it wins, great. If not, not a big deal.
Yeah, it's a great question. So when we did the first 3 barrels, so 75 cases, we pre-sold all of it. We, again, in our kind of friend and family group, we sent an email out to about 20 people who we knew liked wine and said, hey, we have the opportunity to buy this really good stuff, but I need your money up front, and I need you to take a little leap of faith. But again, when you're at $25 a bottle, and we told them everything we could about, we didn't even have a non-disclosure at that point. So we told them exactly what winery came from. We said, here's their website, and here's what they're going to sell us the same wine for like 80% off. So it wasn't hard to sell that very first one. Of course, we didn't make any money on that. We literally sold at our cost. So it was the following year that we did. We had to take I talk about my brother. I've been the one who probably runs the business, most of the business. I'll say, you know, maybe 80 or 90% of the work, but he financed us to begin with. And so that is where I think business partnerships are awesome for a lot of different reasons, because, you know, a yin and a yang, I don't have all the best ideas. So we are able to bounce things off each other all the time. But also he brought something that I didn't have at that time, which was some cash. But that was a one-time investment, and we have not had to put any more money into the business since then. So.
And you mentioned earlier a partner in Napa. Is that your brother, or is there someone else?
Yeah, nope, that's my brother. Okay. So he's just a year older than me, and he's actually a doctor in San Francisco. It was really kind of partly his network of friends. And then I also have a younger brother that is in the wine business in Napa, but not part of our business necessarily. Mm-hmm. But we absolutely lean on him for connections and that sort of thing.
So, you got a man on the inside.
That's right. It's important. I didn't know everything about this business, but I've learned over time. And then, you know, when we saw the opportunity, we were ready to jump. And that's a great learning point is, you know, the preparation happens well before the opportunity arises. I probably was bit by the entrepreneurship bug, maybe at business school, maybe years ago, who knows. But when we saw this little niche of a market that was underserved, this bulk wine, high-end wineries, that, man, this can work. And then we just did it. And you figure things out as you go along.
That's great. I was... I think that's a great quote. Preparation happens well before the opportunity. And I think you're right. Like you don't know when that serendipity will arise, and you want to be ready. And I like that thought of constant vigilance. How has working with your brother in a professional context, how has that changed the relationship?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, at business school, they tell you don't do 2 things when you start a business. Don't go into business with family, and don't do 50-50 partnerships, because it'll just end terribly. I am happy to say 3+ years that we are closer now. I mean, we've always been close, but we can have very frank discussions, you know, about, hey, we want to go in this direction, or we want to do that, and we can disagree, but we get off the phone like, well, couldn't have that conversation with literally anybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a foundation of trust. Do we have our challenges? We absolutely do. At the end of the day, we are totally in sync on producing good wine, you know, bringing good wine, to our customers, and creating value that way.
That's awesome. And then at what point, let's talk about, so you're doing this, you're on active duty and your brother is working full time as a doctor. Especially for those listeners who are on active duty, could you talk about any advice for having a side hustle while fully employed?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know. And I've got a family, 2 kids, 7 and 9 years old. So balancing it all. I was just telling my brother the other day, I don't know what it's like to come home from work and not do something else. So there's a lot of nights and weekends there. But also I learned the importance of outsourcing, and I'll give a plug to a website called Upwork. It used to be Elance for freelancers. But I have learned to outsource things that are, that have a protocol that I can, hey, you do X, then Y, then Z. I outsource that. I mean, I outsource accounting. I taught accounting at West Point. I went to business school for accounting. I can do that, but I realize that's not my best. If I have 1 or 2 hours to do something, it's not accounting. That's not what I should be doing. That doesn't create value for my business. So, but you have to be careful what you outsource. We tried to outsource some marketing at one point, and we got some really great graphic design out of it. And I can't say enough about that. Again, that's not my skill set. But I realized that the voice of our emails and our tone on our webpage, that has to come from us. I mean, the name Claudine, that's my grandmother, passed away many years ago. But, you know, our whole brand is built around this, value. You can have nice things, but you don't have to pay a lot for it, because that's who Claudine was. I realized that nobody tells that story the way that I tell that story, the way that my brother tells that story. I can't outsource the marketing. I can't outsource, copywriting. So be careful. Definitely outsource, but be careful what you outsource, and you can't outsource it all.
And for listeners, so I love Upwork. I've used them for almost a decade now. They're exceptional. I want to call out, and I'll put this in the show notes, in episode 297, the episode right before this one, I interviewed Laura Renner, who runs Freedom Makers. And I wouldn't consider them necessarily broad spectrum outsourcing, in the sense of, like, if you need an accountant and you need a design company and someone to build your website, I'm not sure if that's in their wheelhouse, but we had a really good discussion around virtual assistants and delegation. And I think that what Brian's talking about here applies whether you're an entrepreneur or an executive, your ability to get things off your plate. And I love the distinction Laura used, which is, it's not necessarily just about time, it's about energy. Any task that you do that's depleting and really makes you more lethargic, trying to get that off your plate so you're energized to do the things that really matter. And I love, Brian, how you're saying, like, hey, the voice, the emails, that has to be us. And I think there's a fair amount of discernment there of saying, like, what am I uniquely needing to do versus what can I get off my plate?
So true. It's so true. Don't do the things that that are, the mundane, or just take up time. Do the things that create the value or that somebody else cannot do. And we learned that the hard way, kind of over time, that I was at a breaking point probably a couple of years ago. And I said, I've got to remove some things from my plate. And, when things are small, when you first get off the ground, you're involved in every part of the business, and you should be. So you understand how it works. But once you get into a routine and you get the same thing, here's what happens when an order comes in, it gets, put on this sheet and submitted in. And then there's a follow-up to make sure the shipment happened. That can all be done by, that can either be automated or be done by someone else. And absolutely, that's not my best time spent.
What about, quick question is, we'll hopefully have time to get into the other side hustles, but let's just say if you had a pie chart of your time or the money that you make, what slice of the pie is going to Claudine right now?
Yeah, I would say of my not 9-to-5 Army job, and again, like you mentioned, I just drove away from that on Friday, I would say 30% of my time. So in terms of hours per week, on average, probably 10 to 12 hours per week on Claudine. And that's grown over time. It didn't start off that way. There's probably a big, at the beginning there was, when we were doing licensing and all that stuff, but then it kind of went into a lull. But now, as we've ramped up more customers and fulfilling orders, probably 10 or 12 hours a week.
And how long from, like, that first decision to do this until it was, like, somewhat self-sustaining, or you felt like it reached some sort of tipping point? Was it like a year, 2 years?
I think about a year, right? So when we first launched, we had a lot of good sales, but I think that was people that were just supporting my brother and I, and who would buy whatever product that we were selling one time. I was a little cautious at that time not to read too far into our first month sales. You know, it's in September, so it was starting to cool off. That matters too, and it's hard to sell red wine in the summer, to be really honest. So I didn't read too far into it. But then, you know, a year later, when those people were coming back for a second or third or fourth order, then I realized, okay, you know, people are coming back for the product. They'll buy one time because they support you. They come back again because they see value in it. And they tell their friends about it because they see value in it and want to share that. So probably a year. Probably
took a full year. And then you mentioned earlier networking, because it sounds like that played a really big role in your finding this first big opportunity and realizing you didn't have to produce your own wine or make your own wine. What thoughts do you have around networking or any advice in that?
Well, I'm a person who will take a phone call or a video conference or something with literally anybody. I love talking to people. I think everybody's got an interesting story to tell. So, but that you can end up on a lot of phone calls that don't pertain to what you're doing, and you can run yourself thin. So, specific to this, you know, I needed to learn a little bit about the wine industry. So I would, when I go out to Napa Valley, and I've probably been out there now 25 times in the last 10 years, maybe more. You know, it used to be about going and tasting, going to wineries and doing the kind of Napa Valley thing, but now it's more business. It's about tasting wine with a thought about how do I market and brand this, pricing, all of those sorts of things. But I ask all kinds of questions. And then I always ask of, you know, something of people, hey, can you introduce me to somebody? Who do you think I should talk to next? But then offer that as well. Hey, is there anything I can do to help you out? You know, maybe it's maybe, you know, who knows? You just never know who you're going to partner with. I never burn a bridge. I just feel like the world is a small place. And I love asking, because, you know, for things from people. And if they say, hey, I'll you know, do an introduction, then I will follow up on that. But I also return that. And I make connections all the time for other people.
And you and I have a shared connection. I found out right at the start of the show with Preston Pish, which for listeners, I'll add this in the show notes. Preston's incredible. He's episode 290. He runs We Study Billionaires and has also been that's actually interesting. You both were very, very active while on active duty, which is exciting to see. But what was the story there? Like, how did he end up affecting your business?
So it's a great story. We were at some training together. We were at a summer course, the intermediate level education, right? So we were at Fort Belvoir in Virginia for 16 weeks together. And we find out that we're both interested in investing and whatnot. So we immediately click over that. And he said, hey, I don't have anybody on my podcast this week. And this is, now he's done several hundred podcasts and he gets some really big names. He's at about 70 to 80,000 downloads a day of his podcast. So, but not in the early days, that was 4 years ago now, 5 years ago almost. He invited little old me on there, and we talked markets and investing a little bit. And I had just graduated business school at that time. And then at the end, he said, "Hey, why don't you tell people about your wine business?" And oh, by the way, we were like in his hotel room drinking a bottle of wine during this podcast. So he's like, "This stuff is amazing. You got to tell my listeners about this." Well, we went from about 300 people on our email list to about 1,300 on our email list in about a month, and we did. We doubled our lifetime sales in that very first month after going on the podcast. As I realized, it was a perfect demographic. It's people that were interested in investing and markets and whatnot. Probably also the same people that if you say, hey, I can sell you a $150 bottle of wine for $50, that they're like, yes, I think I'll do that. So, or at least I'll give it a try. And those are some of my best customers. And I've since been on his podcast a couple of times, and we always have a great conversation. And then he always lets me talk a little bit about the wine business afterwards.
I think that is nice, because it goes back to your quote at the beginning, preparation happens well before the opportunity arises. And it doesn't sound like you were going on there expecting for this to be such a pivotal moment in your business. And I can imagine if you weren't prepared, if you didn't have your elevator pitch, if you didn't have everything kind of buttoned up, your website wasn't ready, that opportunity would have been missed. But you had the website up, you knew how to talk about it, you knew how to sell it in a way that was authentic for you, you knew how to tell the story or whatever made the difference. You know, who knows what would have happened had you not been ready. And you certainly weren't expecting that. And I think that underscores this whole thought around preparation.
I think you're exactly right. I was not expecting for him to talk about the wine business at all. But we had also just bottled to several different projects. So we had plenty of inventory. You know, the worst thing that can happen is you get a big bump. You know, you go on Oprah's load as a 10 favorite things, and then your website crashes because you weren't ready for it. Or in our case, if all those people would have showed up to our website, and there would have been nothing to buy because we had run out of everything. So I remember in the months leading up to that, that we had kind of, we had gotten down about zero in the bank by just buying inventory, because we found the right projects and we just, you know, we wanted to be able to produce it. And then luckily, you know, we get this big bump in sales and, you know, my, some of my best customers through that. So you're right. It was fortuitous. I won't give myself really any credit for that, but just it was a lucky stroke there, I suppose.
And you had mentioned, I know that Claudine is kind of one of multiple side hustles. What are the other things that you spend your time on?
Yeah, so for now, this is the one money, you know, producing one. And it goes back to, you know, at some point, you got to pay yourself. And so the first year, I didn't. Everything went back into the business. Year then two and three, I spent a lot of time on this. And so I talked to my brother about it. And I said, hey, I think I'd like to take up some sort of a management fee, you know, so he doesn't do a lot of the day-to-day work. I do. And so, so we agreed on a number and then we've been able to kind of increase that. So, you know, it's, there's gotta be some payoff, I believe, for you. So this is the one thing I do. I get involved in the community a lot, and this is a big thing that is important to me. So I was on the board of my homeowners association, which sounds kind of crazy, but it allowed me to just be in our community. As I was leaving the Fort Gordon, Georgia area, I realized that a lot of my goodbyes were not just people in uniform. They were local business leaders. They were people in the Chamber of Commerce. They were just movers and shakers in the community, because those who I built relationships with over time. So I absolutely 100% believe in investing in your community. And that had nothing to do with my business. I didn't sell wine to those people. Yeah. It is something that's important that I've been lucky that I got to go to business school and I got to, you know, some great training in the Army. I can give some of that back. So that would be my other side hustle is being involved in the community. And now as I move, I'll probably do that again, get involved in the community. But yeah,
I love that because both with networking as well as the community, it's clear there's a very strong desire to give back, to be generous. And I think that that's an approach that will resonate with a lot of listeners because it's not now like, oh, I'm going to this event to see what I can get out of people. It's kind of going with an intent of giving to others. And my just personal thesis is the more that you do that genuinely, there's some number of gifts that kind of rebound and it kind of works out. But when it feels to me different than when I go into something like, what am I going to get out of this? That usually falls flat. And it might be over the course of years or a decade, you know, it's not like this immediate expectation, but I love this thought, like you're accepting phone calls from anyone over time that pays off, but it's not like you're looking for that payout as far as why you're doing it.
No, I mean, people have helped me out along the way. You know, we talked about Preston being instrumental, but he talks to me about the business side of what we do too. So not just, you know, plugging me on a podcast that gets a lot of reach, but it really is, you know, he and I talked even this last weekend about virtual assistants and getting the right one and why that's important. Mm-hmm. So it is, but it goes both ways. I also give out a lot of wine. So I tell people it's my currency in life. So if I have a great conversation, I really get something valuable or not, or I just think that you'd like some wine, I will drop a couple bottles in the mail because why not? I mean, it really is about giving and about experiencing new things. So.
And so back to your decision to leave the Army, how did you approach that, the 15-year mark? Like, what was the thought process going in? Because a lot of people would stay on for those last 5 years. Like, was there a point at which you said, hey, Claudine can support me and my family? Or how did you approach that from a financial aspect?
Yeah. So I think one thing we didn't talk about is so I am continuing Claudine and actually bringing on, hopefully bringing on another business partner, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, but I'm also going to another job. I have interviewed and I'm going to do management consulting for at least for a little while as I leave the Army. So that protects a little bit of my downside for sure. You know, in this whole process of leaving, I've talked to so many people that are, you know, we talk about the wine business. They're like, you're crazy to go into consulting. Why don't you just do this? If it's about raising some money so you can actually make that next big step, let me introduce you to, you know, X, Y, and Z person and you can raise that money. And I'm pretty sure that I can. I guess there's a little bit of risk aversion in me still, that says, you know what, I can do some consulting and then I'll have that on my resume. And then, you know, if Claudine continues to go 18, 24 months, maybe I pop out and I do that. So I am going to another kind of salaried job, but Claudine absolutely is still gonna run. You know, deciding when to leave, I guess I had this moment of, you know, I'm 36 years old. I'm lucky that I'm in great health. My family's all in good health. It was just about, I just wanted to solve different problems, do different things. And I think there are opportunities, things that are available to you in your 30s that may not be available to you in your 40s when you already have one retirement. I heard some feedback about, yeah, we love hiring military, but, you know, when you've already got one pension, that might actually affect how much you, how much you're going to be willing to give to somebody else. So it was just the right time. Everything kind of lined up. And, yeah.
And you're going to McKinsey.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. So very, very excited.
I'm super. Yeah. I have some of my best friends from business school and even from the Army are at McKinsey, and it's a great firm. I'm super excited to get going. You know, there's going to be great training there, solving some really challenging, fun and challenging problems. So,
and how did you, or how have you approached finding someone to shepherd and run your baby while you kind of pass the football to them?
Yeah. So I was on another podcast, actually a vet's podcast, but for kind of, you know, focused in on the service academies. And through that, I again, networking, I had somebody call me up and say, hey, I print labels out of Portland and I'd love to, you know, maybe, you know, work with you. We sent our business there. We got a quote and it was like 40% less than what I was paying in Napa to get printing done. So there's another vet owned, you know, guy that I met and saved us money. But one of the other things that happened out of there was, somebody called me and said, hey, I'd like to maybe do a private label. Is it possible for you to, instead of putting Claudine on the label, can we put in something else on it? And absolutely, we actually do that for a couple of other people. And so we were looking for different wines, something that would fit what he was looking for. And then I, you know, as we kept this conversation going, I said, yeah, I'm at this kind of fork in the road. I don't know what, you know, what Claudine's gonna, you know, look like in the future. And he said, you know what? I mean, I'm an empty nester. I've been in branding and marketing for my entire career, post Army for him. And, he's like, maybe, you know, maybe we could, partner up and work together. And so he's traveling out to Napa Valley here, shortly with me. He's going to get a crash course in Claudine 101 and we'll see where it goes. So back to that networking thing, super important, back to taking that phone call, and spending that time. I could potentially have a new business partner to help run day-to-day out of it all.
That's great. And what I love about all of this is there seems to be this prevailing thought that one should focus on their passion, or, you know, if you're getting traction, you got to go all in. And I love that you're showing an example of something that energizes you, something that generates money. But it's not like you're looking to this to be your be all end all right now. Like, you're letting it be what it is. And I've seen so many people try to force an organization or a job to be something it's not. And I could see a scenario where you really want Claudine to support you and your family full time. And maybe that puts too much of a cash strain on it. And maybe what would have become an empire just dwindles away because it doesn't have the money to grow. And so I love that you're just kind of, I picture you blowing on a flame and like getting it to grow rather than just smothering it.
Well, I love teams of people too. You know, like I said, I do a lot of the day-to-day stuff and I mean, I've been looking for somebody who's got a branding and marketing background, because I said that's a lot of what we do. You know, and then it's fortuitous that at this moment when I'm, you know, need to offload some of the day-to-day, that somebody shows up and says, hey, I've been doing that thing. And we'll see if it'll work out. I have really good hopes for it, but you're right. I am not a person who needs to control 100% of the company, and I don't want to ever give up any equity or anything like that. No, I want to be a part of something that grows. And I think that is best done in teams. You know, maybe that's the army in me, that it is, you know, we do everything in teams. There's nothing that is by yourself in the military. So, you know, you got to have the right business partners in life and in business. You know, so you should think long and hard about that, that decision. But I think teams are much stronger than individuals.
That's great. And I always like to ask about resources. You know, you've learned a lot, obviously, about marketing, about branding. Is there any book or podcast or conference or online course, anything that's helped you in your starting companies and having these side hustles that you would recommend to listeners?
Yeah, definitely. So How I Built This is a great podcast, an NPR podcast about how businesses have gotten started and off the ground. Those are great snippets there. Books, Jim Collins, Good to Great is a really good one. Influence, Robert Cialdini. Realize that there is, like, what we do in marketing, what we're always influencing people, whether I'm in the army trying to get my boss to, you know, see, you know, let us do something, or you're always influencing. And so understanding the science behind influence, I think, is really super important. So Cialdini is kind of a leader in that area. And then recently, somebody turned me on to this book called Building a Story Brand. That's by Donald Miller. And this is really about telling your story. How do you distill down what it is that you do? And then how do you communicate that to other people? And just super fascinating to understand what it is that that you do. I realized after reading that or listening to it, I do all these on audiobooks while I'm working out or something else, driving, whatnot. You know, that we're in the trust business. Like, we cannot produce a bad project because we don't have a tasting room where we have lots of, you know, foot traffic or anything like that. Our customers, that relationship, they've got to see value in what we're doing. And we've got to kind of hit the mark all the time. So everything we do is kind of about building trust.
That's great. And for our listeners at beyonduniform.org, I'll add links to Good to Great, Influence, Building a Story Brand, all of those resources. I want to ask your advice on two things. One is, this is very specific, but if someone is listening and excited about the wine industry and wants to go in that direction after service or right now, what advice you have for them? And then what advice you have for someone who either wants to start a company or at least start some sort of side hustle that may generate some money?
Yeah, so a couple of thoughts on that. How to get into the wine business. First of all, like, you wouldn't ever choose to go into the wine business. It's highly regulated. You know, you have 50 states, 50 different shipping laws and whatnot, which we are constantly navigating. However, it's something we are passionate about. And when you're passionate about something and you find the right business model, you will break through those barriers and you'll figure it out. So, you know, what I would tell people is where I thought I was going to start is I thought I would just volunteer some time doing some sommelier work or, you know, helping there was a catering business who, you know, would just kind of pick some random bottles. They didn't know a lot about wine. And so what I thought I would do is just consult with them and help pick wine for events. And I started to do that. And then this kind of fell in my lap. So find a place, if you're passionate about being in this business, find a place where you can learn about it. And that could be calling me. Send me an email and we'll set up a phone call. And I'll talk about there's plenty of other ways to get involved that I think would be useful. So the second part is about starting a side hustle. So a quick anecdote, I get off the plane here in Destin and call an Uber and a guy shows up. Somehow I matched with a Tesla, which is pretty cool. Didn't pay extra for that. But a guy shows up to pick up our family. And, you know, gets to talking to the Uber driver and he's an active duty Air Force here. And he actually runs a fleet of Teslas using an app called Turo, where you can rent cars out. So he does two things. He rents cars out on Turo and he does a little bit of driving for Uber and Lyft. And I said, how did you, you know, decide to do that? I mean, he's an enlisted guy, you know, as I, you know, are you independently wealthy? You just buy this fleet of Teslas? He said, no, you know, I went to the local Tesla dealer and got a really good deal. They threw in free supercharging. And he said, I only need to rent that thing out for about 6 days a month to break even. He's like, it's booked up almost all the time. I was like, that is awesome. I love that you just, you know, he was passionate about cars and he wanted to, it didn't take anything. He started with one, and now he's got a small fleet of them. And so that is it. He was prepared. He was excited about something. And then when he saw an opportunity, he jumped into it. So that's what I'd tell people is, he made sure he had the right product market fit, that he realized there weren't a lot of Teslas down here, especially on Turo and for Uber and Lyft. So he found out that there was a need, and the market was willing to pay for it overall. And so he scaled up that way. And I just, you know, it's anecdotal. But I think that there's so many different cool things that that you can do. You just, it is about taking a leap, doing that very first thing, stepping over the edge. And I tell people all the time that the best thing I've learned from Claudine is I've just demystified the starting your own business thing. You take some common sense, you take some intuition, you know, there was a business model thought, you know, behind it a little bit, but we just did it. And you will figure things out, just like in the military where you're given impossible problems with limited resources and smart people figure stuff out. I think I've learned more from the military about running a business than anything I learned in business school. So.
That's great. I'm just trying to, I know we're starting to run short on time. I'm wondering, you had mentioned legality and I was curious about that. Like, how do you kind of deal with shipping to states that don't allow wine? And I was also wondering if you've tried getting wines, maybe it's not the target market, but into the NEX or the AAFES,
yep,
which Steve wrote, and I'm assuming that is like the Air Force equivalent of the next.
APs. That's exactly right. Army and Air Force exchange. Yep.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So that was a decision early on about what license we got. So different licenses allow you to do different things. And I actually went to the liquor control in California, said, hey, this is kind of our business model. And I let them kind of guide me to the type of license I needed so that I could ship and that sort of thing. So, it is challenging. There are some states we can't get into. Utah, Alabama, I have to ship to an ABC store, and then your customers would have to come pick that up. So I don't do that. A couple other states that are really challenging. But otherwise, if you're licensed to go to those, and there's software out there that'll help you do this, by the way. So it's not something that I've got to, you know, meticulously, keep track of. Some software helped me with that. But it's challenging. To your other point about being in AFES or NEX, the license that we have does not allow us to wholesale. So we cannot sell to a distributor, and the distributor sells then to the retailer. So we have chosen specifically to go direct to consumer. So that's the only way that we can sell. So we've been in a couple of restaurants in California, which allows that restaurant, the laws are such that the restaurant can buy directly from us. But in most states, you have the three-tier system. So you got a retailer, you got a wholesaler, and then you got a producer, and you can't. You have to go through all three of those. So if you want to be in a retail outlet, so that has not made sense for us. We don't have the scale to do that. That is a place we could go in the future. But right now, if I had to do that right now, our margins aren't such that we could support doing a wholesale model.
And if someone is not in Utah or not in Alabama and interested in trying out Claudine, what's your website or what's the best way for them to get a hold of that?
Absolutely. So www.claudinewines, claudinewines.com. And then you can see what we've got. So we do small projects, so things turn over pretty fast. If you see it there, that means we've got it. And then two or three months, something's usually on the website, and then you were looking for the next project. So you're not going to get a consistent thing every year. We're not going to have from the same vineyard the same stuff year over year. We just look for what's best out there, and generally have cabs and pinots And we just did a Chardonnay for the first time. But that's the best way to do it. You know, if we do a first order discount, $50 off, you know, and I'm happy to, I'll do a special link for the
Omniinform
listeners, so they get a little, maybe a little better bump, for that. But we try to de-risk it. Again, you're going to take a chance and you're going to send me, you know, some money. I want to make sure that, that you have a good experience. And so the one way I do that is to make the first order pretty, pretty inexpensive, and you get to try, you know, maybe our whole lineup. So
that's great. Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended. You can take that either as what have we not covered that you want to make sure listeners know, or any final words of wisdom you want to leave them with.
Yeah. So I want words of wisdom. It means that I have wisdom to give. I just tell people to just go and do it. You know, the preparation happens. You know, you've read books or listened to podcasts, and that's all really good training. Or you've been in the military. That is the best training for running a business, because you just are a problem solver. So just do it. Just get out there and do it. If you need help getting over that edge, call me, email me, and we'll talk through it. But I've had great conversations with so many people who just gave up their time, who helped me refine my business model. Sometimes, and I've talked to people too, who just didn't have a great business model, that like, hey, you're trying to buy something essentially for $5 and sell it for $5. There's no business there. And so I'll give you, you know, straight talk about that. But yeah, just do it. It would be the words of encouragement, just to get over the hump and do it, and do it while you're in uniform. I mean, talk about de-risking things. If you can do it on the side, while you still have that extra income, wow. I mean, that's definitely the best way to go.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for your time. And for listeners, in the show notes, I'll have a link to Claudine Wines in case you didn't jot that down. And really appreciate your advice and your willingness to extend a discount, but also to help out people who give you a call. And I think it's a powerful example of how, that generosity, it does good in the world. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thanks for your time. I love listening to your podcast, and it's super cool to be able to be on it.
Surface. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you, in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life, and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week, despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.